Hello and welcome to Beyond Reproach, the Minisode.
Hi guys.
That's Stephanie Domingo.
And this is Tux Lurzel over here.
And we are here
to... On the ones and twos.
We are here to read your stories about, well, about a very heavy subject. Somehow we decided it would be fun to talk about this and then...
We were temporarily insane, perhaps.
That's true, yes.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, this is an important topic, so I'm glad we're discussing it, even though after we decided on it, we were like, oh shit.
Yeah.
So the topic of the show is teaching children about slavery and Black history and how doing a better job of that would help us as a society
move forward. Yeah, and heal.
Yeah. I mean, we can never fully heal the wounds of slavery,
but we could start to address...
Exactly.
Yeah.
In a much more profound way than what we're doing now.
Definitely.
But it was difficult to get people to write about this subject because it's so heavy and it's difficult to organize your thoughts in a...
Because it's such a big thing to start to talk about the foundation of our country.
Yeah.
In just, you know, a small email.
Yeah.
It's very, very tough.
Hopefully we'll...
I had a friend who... He's a social worker in San Francisco. We talk, the two of us, of race and society all the time, but he said that he just didn't feel comfortable as like a non... He's just like, you need more Black voices. And I'm like, but you can weigh in as a Vietnamese American. Like, he's just like, I just want to hear more Black voices. And I'm like, this feels like a dodge, but I get it. Because I think it should kind of be centered around Black voices. But I think everyone who grew up here and went to school needs to weigh in and needs to think critically about this. Because it's all of our stories. It's not just Black history. It's American history.
Yeah. And thank you guys again
thank
for writing
so
in.
Thank you so much. Oh. So I'm going to start with a letter that I got from my friend Emily. She was my freshman roommate. It's funny, all of my roommates have been teachers. Every single one. Except for you.
Yeah.
Wow. Weird. So she used to teach in New Orleans. So she reached out to some friends of hers who are still down there. She now lives in Massachusetts with her fiance. Her fiance is also a teacher. So I have feedback from her friends in New Orleans, her fiance, and herself. So I'm just going to read a little bit of what she sent.
Okay.
So she wrote, identifying whether or not we explicitly taught about slavery was a little bit more difficult to identify since we had babies, K through 4, but we did celebrate Black History Month intentionally, and we purposefully integrated texts highlighting notable Black leaders like Ruby Bridges, Frederick Douglass, Rosa Parks, etc., in our year-long reading curriculum. All of this to say we were more focused on teaching our kids how to read and write than on teaching children social studies. But so much of the reading curricula at this age group is focused on building children's background info, hence stories about people who are culturally relevant in their lives and geography. And she went on to say, sadly, there's still tons of institutional racism alive and well in New Orleans and in the South, despite all the education reform taking place. Some examples of all the school buildings that Black kids go to being named after Black people. But of course, the one, air quote, good public school that only white kids go to is named after Ben Franklin, if they don't go to private school, she added. It should not surprise you that all low-income folks are zoned out of that school because of housing prices in the neighborhood being so high, as is so commonly the case in urban areas. We know a lot about that in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Race and income, class are correlated in New Orleans, and it's pretty unlikely that you'll find a Black kid at Ben Franklin or a white kid at Booker T. Washington High School. She says, short story short, I don't have a lot to say about teaching history to such young children, but class and race were things discussed informally in school every day with all of our kids and all of our families. I could not recall a single day where race wasn't front and center. So she says, now to the other side of the spectrum, private New England boarding schools whose annual tuition exceeds Cornell's. So
oh,
this
Jesus.
Is, yes, that probably means it's 50 grand or more a year.
That's insane.
Yeah.
For grade school.
Yeah. For a boarding school in New England. So this is where her fiance teaches.
Wow.
I should say Ashley is a super nerd. She spent one of her recent adult summers studying the abolitionist movement in Philadelphia, poring over primary research texts. And she has nerd in parentheses in all caps. I just think of that Simpsons episode where this drive-by nerd. There's even a YouTube video of her talking about it. I've actually seen this video. But she says that she's not the common case. As such, she says that she focused her entire U.S. history class around the theme of slavery, first starting with the pre-colonial Wow. slavery in the Caribbean and Central America, continuing through the Civil War to modern day. Because she's in a private school, she has the flexibility to organize her class from whatever social vantage point she likes. On the other hand, yeah. she said she is held to some pretty tight timelines about how much content she's expected to cover. For example, when we first started dating, she said 3 years ago, she would spend close to a month on the Civil War, and they wouldn't even cover the topic until the second semester. This year, she got 2 days to cover the entire Civil War and had to finish it before... had to finish it before Thanksgiving. So the issue is not so much about whether or not slavery is included in her curriculum as it is the expectations she's supposed to cover so much material in such a short amount of time.
Yeah.
That makes it really difficult for her.
And that's... That's a private school where she has more freedom.
Exactly.
Which means it's even worse in the public
school system. I shudder to think.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I read that, I'm like, oh, we're fucked.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So she says, as a result, she volunteers to teach a human rights seminar elective that she has a lot more time and space to cover issues like slavery, racism, oppression, gender, you name it. But that means kids have to elect to take it and aren't necessarily forced to engage in uncomfortable discussions about oppression. Hmm. Usually the kids who elect to take the seminar are pretty engaged and progressive. So it's really just attracting like-minded students in an echo chamber.
Yeah.
The pressure to cover as much material as possible in every subject is a common theme in private and public education these days. There's so much emphasis on students, quote, catching up, that the amount of work teachers and students are expected to do is really unreasonable. She said this is a separate topic on the structure and state of U.S. education, which we should dive into broadly because it's crazy.
You'll find out as we go through this episode, but there's going to be several subjects that come up that correlate to slavery and education, but aren't exactly under that umbrella.
Yeah.
And we do want to go back and revisit a lot of these topics, but it's just too much to do all in one show.
Yeah, definitely. She goes on to say at last but not least, she's talking about her experience. I work in a predominantly Latinx gateway city in Massachusetts, 78% of whom are native Spanish speakers. Most of our kiddos are either first or second generation immigrants from the Dominican Republic or Puerto Rico. Although more and more we are starting to see undocumented refugees from Central America in our schools. Fortunately, we are protected by our state's attorney general's office and do not have to disclose any information regarding citizenship to any local or federal immigration agencies, which is great. Because of the demographic in our schools, much of our curriculum is focused on creating a welcoming environment despite our current presidential administration and teaching English literacy. One of the very interesting things I've learned from our kiddos who grew up in other countries is that they never spent too much time considering race until they moved to the U.S. For example, a darker-skinned Dominican was still Dominican, but in the U.S., that person would be called Black.
Yeah.
My boss, who is Puerto Rican, said the same thing, and I think it's really interesting insight. It makes complete sense that the U.S. has a preoccupation with race since it was founded on the backs of Black slaves, but I don't think it always occurs to us that we are the makers of our own beds.
Yeah.
It would be impossible for us to talk about our history without talking about slavery, and yet we find a way to do it in so many of our schools. And it's a strange and terrible paradox, she says.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make sense to try to talk about it like halfway, but that's what we do because it's not...
comfortable.
It's not comfortable and it's not easy to talk about the dark stories from our past to children. And I understand why people consider that difficult and uncomfortable, but that doesn't mean that you don't have to do it.
It's nuanced, and we want so much in our education generally to think that everything is black and white, and it's not.
Yeah.
And it's such a disservice that we're doing. It drives me crazy, but I thought that her insights were really, really great.
I'm really glad that we got a teacher to write in, because that was one of the perspectives that I was really curious to see.
Yeah, same.
And it's interesting to hear the difference between like a public school teacher versus a private school teacher.
Yeah, and in the South versus in the North.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks, great. Emily.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm sorry, I put the squeeze to you.
We really, like we said before, we really had to like be like, guys, please write to us. Cause
she would be a great guest, though.
I
told her, I'm like, you need to practice your Terry Gross.
Yeah.
you have a few months, but you should come on.
Okay, so My sister wrote in again. She wrote in to our last minisode, but part of the reason I wanted to talk about this subject is because she does have kids, and she and I have talked about this subject before, and how she was concerned about how she would teach her kids.
Yes.
So she has two 17-year-old boys. One of them has a very, very good friend, Vaishan, that lives there. Not lives there, but he's in her house. He basically lives there.
Yeah.
Like he spends the night constantly.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So they're really close. And Vaishan is black, and he obviously has a different experience. She talked to her kids about this before she wrote in.
Okay.
So it's interesting to hear what they had to say. She starts, "I decided to talk to the three 17-year-old teen boys that roam around my house on the topic of racism in schools. I ask questions like, when do you remember being introduced to topics in school about slaves, indigenous people in Columbus, and the Holocaust? They all said that slavery and Christopher Columbus were only taught early on in elementary school, and they were too young to really have any opinions of their own on the subjects. And that they were young and they were like trying to avoid confrontation because they were little kids. But if they had been taught these subjects later on in high school and on a bigger level, that they would have had a lot to say about it. And I think that teachers are kind of
shying away from it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that was a recurring thing. Yeah. I was just doing a little bit of research, and everyone feels so uncomfortable. Yeah. Even people who, like, this is your job to teach history, they gloss over it.
Yeah.
They really...
And it's really unfair that teenagers are people who are essentially young adults.
Yeah.
And beginning
that
to
form... That is the age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the age that they should be having these discussions with children, but... Or not children, young adults.
Young adults.
They should be having these discussions so that kids can kind of learn
That's
about...
actually shocking to me that they don't talk about in high school.
Yeah.
That's...
Yeah.
Not good.
Yeah. She goes on to say, all the kids agreed that depending on the teacher, they might get extra information.
Okay.
Reese said that he had a teacher that was really into telling the kids the truth about history no matter what, and that he really enjoyed that class. The teacher was very focused on the indigenous people of the Finger Lakes where we grew up.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Yeah, local history is super relevant.
All three kids said that around age 9 or 10, they noticed a shift in the way teachers approached certain topics. The boys said to her, ask Riley, I have a niece who's 7. They said, ask Riley how they're taught to sit quietly on the floor and what they call that. So Jen said, Riley, what do you call it when you sit quietly on the floor? And she said, we sit crisscross applesauce. And all the boys laughed and said, yep, no more Indian style. There's this push to be more politically correct in the way they phrase things to children, which is obviously a good thing.
Yeah, no, they're moving with the times.
Yeah.
We did call it Indian style.
Yeah, I always called it Indian style. Yeah. But apparently they call it crisscross applesauce.
Yeah,
now.
I've heard that too. My niece talks about crisscross applesauce. Yeah.
So Jen goes on to say, now I'm 42 years old, and all I can tell you is this is a long way from how I was taught in schools. We won't get into that because it was all wrong and all depressing, but the kids think that great changes have been made. They also said that because Harriet Tubman settled down in Auburn later in her life, that might make it harder for the Auburn school system to avoid topics of racism and hide the truth.
Yeah.
Whereas other schools might get away with it a little bit more. But Harriet Tubman is a huge focus of even the town. There's a museum, there's statues, there's stuff all over the place.
So it's hard to ignore.
Yeah.
Her legacy.
Actually, there was a push when I was in high school to change the name of the high school to Harriet Tubman High, but all these stupid fucking white people were like, kids that didn't even know why they didn't
want it,
because their parents are racist, basically.
Exactly. No, racism is a legacy that is handed down by their parents.
Yeah.
It's, kids aren't born racist.
Yeah. On that same subject, Jen goes on to say, the boys all said the same thing that really made me proud. There is no time for racism in our lives. We all know better than that. And school did not teach us that. Our families taught us that. School can only help guide the ignorance of racism. But home is where it all comes from.
Yeah.
They basically said that that kind of racism is much more of an issue with older generations. And that they don't really deal with it that much in schools anymore.
Yeah. And that's great.
Yeah. I've heard that a lot from a gay perspective. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember being in school and really not feeling comfortable talking about my sexuality.
Yeah.
Like, a few of my friends knew. My really close friends knew. Mm-hmm. but I didn't tell other people. And I think that really made it difficult for me to form friendships with other gay people, especially in high school. But even later in life, I really didn't know much about gay culture until I was in my mid-20s.
Yeah.
Because I was just not comfortable with it. Whereas now, I hear all the time, Russell's nieces, my younger sister, McKenna, always talk about how in school, they have tons of gay friends and everyone's out and everyone's totally cool with it and there's no...
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That gives me hope. People should be able to be themselves and it shouldn't be an issue.
At first, when Jen was saying that, I was like, well, her boys are white though, so maybe they're saying like racism isn't an issue for them, but that's easy for them to say as white kids.
Yeah.
But Vaishan said the same thing. So,
yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. So Jen says... So to my surprise, I feel that schools here are on a better path than the way I was taught. I also want to say that the kids have so much technology at their fingertips and social media that we didn't have. They have endless knowledge and can get the answers in seconds. Today's kids are smarter than the kids of the 80s and 90s, and because of the information they can access, school did touch bases on all these topics, but the bigger push was for math and English, so that there was not much time spent on any one of these topics. So while they're not... exactly talking about slavery in a comprehensive way or the way that I still believe that it should be taught, even without that, it does sound that hopefully aren't the next generation of young people, as they become our age and they get voting and everything, hopefully things really can start
to
change.
I think integration is the answer. These neighborhoods that don't have any people of color, they're still very much isolated in their whiteness. It's good that that your nephews have like black friends.
Yeah.
Because that is the key to being up close with someone and realizing like, oh, they're just like me.
Yeah.
The end. Like, this is stupid.
Well, and that's part of why we started having these conversations. And that's what inspired this episode, is Jen was talking about the racism that he does experience and how it affected Tyler to see that.
Yeah. Happening to your friend.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, this is unfair.
But the racism that he experiences does not come from his peers. It comes from older people.
Oh, okay.
Is what he was saying. It's like,
wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's real. That's great that it doesn't come from his peers.
Yeah.
That is a change.
Yeah.
Because I was called the N-word second week of kindergarten.
Yeah. It largely is older adults who are calling him names.
Terrible.
And
Terrible. But okay. That's great insights.
Yeah.
The youth.
Hopeful.
The youth.
Yeah, I was not expecting to
hear
anything.
Children are our future,
They are. but I wasn't expecting to hear anything hopeful when we're discussing such a heavy topic. So that was really great to get that. Thank you, Jen, for writing in.
Thank you, Jen.
Thank you, Reese and Tyler and Vaishan.
Yes, thanks, guys. So I'm going to read a letter from Meredith. She is a friend of Russell's, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, my husband's Russell's.
So she writes, thank you so much for the inspiration and provocation. I have thoughts on how the education system, even at the classroom level, can begin to create space for open conversations about this nation's past and present social scourges and bright spots. Being intentional about the culture of any organization, be it familial, educational, or commercial, is a great strategy for helping its people understand how to have tough conversations. Regardless of what's available in historical context, in historical texts, there are rules of engagement and a vocabulary for each arena in which history is discussed. Our teachers and school administrators need to be enabled to create psychologically safe, inclusive spaces where no line of questioning is off limits. A codified school-wide, district-wide, or even better, system-wide set of values could help administrators and teachers decide whether, when a kid asks a tough question, if it's allowed to, quote, go there. For example, if it is clear, shared value of hearing all voices, and a teacher's faced with whether to allow a conversation about our inhumane past or shut it down, they should push their decision against that value. So she says, thank you for making me think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. We should be able to have these conversations in an open way that doesn't shy away from some of these really, really uncomfortable truths.
Yeah, because... 100%. She has two boys. They're very young, though. They're just entering school or have only been in school for a couple years. So I don't think that they've gotten into these heavy subjects yet, but they will. But
they're still just learning how to read.
Exactly. But they also live in Brooklyn, so I feel
they'll
experience.
Be fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they'll be fine.
It's weird how differently children are taught depending on where they live. It's really unfair to them.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm going to read a letter from Missy. Missy says, first, what an awesome topic to get people talking about our nation's history and the process in which we learn about it. Jumping right in, I feel that what is taught in schools at the elementary level is failing our children in public and parochial schools. My children attended both before I began homeschooling them 2 years ago. Many things in our history are glossed over and made to sound less horrific than they actually were. I am passionate about making sure that my children understand what has happened so that they are aware not only of the nation's history, but aware of how emotions, fear, and greed can affect the generations after us. I could talk about this for days and days, and most days we do with the kids, but let's touch on Columbus Day first.
Oh, God. Preach.
Yeah.
Preach.
Children are taught the story of Christopher Columbus sailing with majestic ships and discovering or finding America. Wrong, wrong, wrong. Something first has to be lost to be found, and I'm quite sure that the Native Americans knew right where she was all along.
Yeah, and I'm just going to jump in. Sorry, Missy. But it's complete and utter garbage that Columbus is still taught in schools.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, he didn't even set a pinky toe in North America.
No, like, not once. Never.
Navigationally dumb. Mm-hmm. And it's just a lie. It's a horrible lie.
And he was a fucking murderer.
Oh, yes. Like, yes.
Horrible.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, his name should be synonymous with genocide, and that's the only reason we should know him, not this.
People didn't actually care about Columbus until about 100 years ago. When our country was still very young, nobody gave a half a shit about him.
Yeah, because he's nothing.
Yeah. And then somebody...
In relation to us.
Somebody basically decided they wanted to write an autobiography for money, and they chose him, and then he became...
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
And that's why children are taught about him.
Scandal.
Yeah. We would love to go into lots of these sort of side topics, but we're trying to focus today.
Yes, okay. Moving on, sorry. Yeah.
So Missy goes on to say, then these same children are taught that Native peoples were happy to help the colonizers establish their settlements on their newfound land. Wrong. The Native peoples were slaughtered, enslaved, and pushed off their homelands. Just those two lies about history are disturbing enough, but you can open any school textbooks, and many are filled with glittery lies to make the genocide of nations of people seem like it happened in a far, far away land long, long ago, even though America is still quite young as a nation. Being a homeschooling parent gives me a lot of room and time to let my kids explore history and understand it, and not just tell me dates and names and events. I teach history as a group subject for grades 6, 3, and 1, while my 3-year-old is with us too. The same subject matter is covered during our conversations. They all have received the same information in words that they each can understand. I believe that including the younger kids in the more advanced conversations and lessons helps plant the seed for hunger for information in the future.
Good for her.
We start by using the correct words in schools. We teach our kids to try and tell us how they are feeling and what the difference is between sad and angry or happy, yet we refuse to call the genocide of a group of people exactly what it is and instead slap some sparkle on it and move quickly past it. With information being at our literal fingertips, I find it heartbreaking that many people don't take these opportunities to learn as much as possible about our history as a nation and our history personally. We cannot do better until we know better. I could keep going and going and going, but it is quite late and I'm going to switch gears and put on my teaching mama hat and get some lesson plans done. Thank you for starting these conversations and letting us send you some thoughts on the topic. That was great, Missy. Thank you so much. That's really, really great.
Really good.
And I know in our last episode we say something about homeschooled kids, but you then say, like,
I say that they're okay and you're just like, they're weird.
Well, what we end up deciding on is that if it's a group of kids being taught together, it's totally fine. It's learning.
Completely.
Yeah.
You can't even tell.
Yeah. But homeschooling one kid, the kids never really get socialized.
Yeah. They can be a little odd.
So sorry about talking negatively. Sorry about
talking.
Yes.
Period.
Exactly.
So we have a voicemail from my sister, Angela. Thank you so much. We have so many different group messages in the family because I have 5 sisters, but I sent it to the main group text. And the day after, she sent this message.
Hi, Stephanie. Hi, Tex. I listened to your recent mini episode, and I would like to answer your call for input on the topic of the manner in which slavery is covered in the educational system in the U.S. While I am a parent of 2 young children, my oldest has just entered the public school system at the ripe age of 6, being that it's December, and she has yet to experience the month of February in school. She has not yet been exposed to any references of Black history, including slavery. Like most decent adults, I detest the fact that historical lessons related to slavery likely only occur once a year in the shortest month for children ages 5 through 18. And although I cannot speak to the current slavery education in primary school, I can say that Native American history is typically covered in similar fashion as it occurs between Columbus Day and Thanksgiving Day. I can report that the system is still force-feeding children lies with respect to the Native peoples of the U.S. Kids are still taught non-factual songs and lessons about the Mayflower and the first pilgrims, etc. And I definitely had to burst those utopic falsehoods immediately. And I sought out books from the library that offered insights into the rich history of Native Americans. As a result, my general feeling is that the burden of providing children with unadulterated and extensive education about the history of the U.S. rests solely on the shoulders of parents. You know, while your child may luck out and get a great teacher, his or her lectures are likely still restricted by time, as the overall curriculum for every grade level is dense, and they have to keep moving to make sure topics that are covered in standardized exams are covered during class. You know, it's not enough to hope for a great teacher. You really do have to be the change you want to see. And that's my two cents, for what it's worth. On another note, I would like to suggest that you both discuss the role that local legislature plays in controlling which textbooks are approved and disseminated within the state and or district. I know that recently the Idaho legislature removed references to global warming from school curriculums, and attempts elsewhere have occurred to nullify other hot topics like evolution. And I'm really interested in hearing your insights on documented cases in which local governments have forbade the use of textbooks containing too much truth about slavery, and whether there is any palpable interest or movements anywhere currently in the U.S. to demand changes to textbooks and curriculums to be more historically accurate, inclusive, and extensive. Thank you.
So well said.
So good, right?
Yeah, really. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Several people who wrote in did kind of touch on Indigenous peoples as sort of like a, not a metaphor, but sort of related to the same.
Yeah, it's covered themes. In similar ways.
Yes, exactly.
Or not covered in similar ways, we should say.
We would like to revisit that subject again in the future. That won't be the subject of our next topic, but we would love to revisit that. And when it comes to what your sister was saying about textbooks.
Yeah, like legislatures too.
That. Yeah, we really do want to also revisit that subject and really explore that subject.
It's a good question.
Yeah.
It's a really good question. Yeah. I didn't know that was going down in Idaho, that they're just like, I guess, teaching too much truth.
I've heard some things that are really upsetting about.
I know in Texas, they try to get rid of critical thinking. They're Jesus. Like, we don't need this. Well, I'm like, excuse me?
Don't encourage kids to think.
Yeah.
On the subject of Texas,
we
recently put something up on our Instagram. This is not something that anyone wrote into us, but I did want to kind of talk about this on this episode a little bit. So we put up a post on our Instagram with a quote from a textbook in Texas about slavery and basically how slavery is whitewashed in schools. So the quote from this actual textbook in Texas is, "The treatment of enslaved Africans varied. Some slaves reported that their masters treated them kindly." And I put up, you know, kind of like a caption saying like, it's disgusting, it's whitewashing, it's intentionally
making
misleading.
Light.
Yeah. And within seconds, we had our first official troll.
Yeah, he had some time that day.
He did. So he must have been following specific hashtags related to slavery or racism.
Yeah, I was joking that he probably gets up every morning, he has like his cup of coffee, and then he searches the hashtag racism and just like gets to work.
Yeah. Also, his screen name on Instagram was like Aryan something.
Yeah.
But it was spelled in a way that it wasn't immediately clear that it said Aryan. But then when you like said it out loud, you're like, So he was totally a white supremacist.
Yes.
Anyways, so I put up this post. Within seconds,
and
he
his
comments.
Page is private, of course,
private
because
coward.
That's how you
that's
how you troll on the internet.
Yeah. So his first comment was, "Some were bad, some were treated better. This is a fact. Something that's true for slavery throughout history. Why is this so hard for you to grapple with?" I knew that I was opening a can of worms, but I went on to make one response and just say,
Tux went on to try to have a reasonable argument.
And I should have known better. I should have known better.
But why?
I did. So I put up one comment and basically saying, I'm not going to read everything that I said. But what I was saying was that owning human beings is horrific no matter how nicely you might treat them. And that like, focusing on a few quote-unquote nice slave masters in school textbooks is intentionally misleading to young people who don't know any better. And of course, he came back with some more white supremacist revisionist bullshit. And after talking it over with Stephanie a little bit, because I
like,
wanted to
keep
going.
Don't feed this troll.
Yeah, yeah. It's just so hard for me not, because I love Yeah. I love conversations and yeah. I love discussions. And
but he's not trying to hear anything. Not, yeah, he's trying exactly. to get a rise out of you.
Yeah. So Stephanie talked me off the ledge and was like, don't respond. Don't delete it.
Yeah.
But don't
delete it. Don't respond. Respond to people who want to have a real dialogue.
Exactly. Yeah.
And ignore him.
Yeah. So we decided not to respond. But then somebody else who follows us on Instagram and agrees with what we were saying.
Bless
that
his heart.
Person responded.
Oh, God.
And then it was like all hell broke loose.
Seriously.
There was within a few hours, there were like more than 20 comments just off of this guy's one comment, like a whole feed of things. Total word salad.
Oh.
There was so much word salad. It was
insane.
And you guys, romaine, you can't be eating romaine right now.
Yeah.
But so at first we were like, oh my God. And we were chuckling to each other, just sending each other these ridiculous comments back and forth. But then something happened where like all of a sudden out of the blue, the guy switched from just nonsense to actual white supremacist garbage that he was putting on our Instagram page.
Yes.
So it was like, okay, it's been a couple hours.
And he was jumping in the comments of others that had nothing to do with his point and just spouting white
nonsense.
Supremacist garbage.
Yeah.
So we had Tux deleted his comments.
I deleted his comments and blocked his account. Yeah. It was just, you know, I wanted to leave it up so that it didn't look like we were being...
Or editing
the feed. Exactly. But once he started actually saying like really some horrible shit, I was like, okay, no.
Yeah,
we're not
doing
this today.
I didn't even read it all. I mean, he was writing like paragraphs.
I'm not even going to get into what he was saying, but it was bad. We blocked him. But it made us think about trolls.
Yes.
And how to handle trolls. So we've decided that that's going to be the topic of our next episode.
Yeah.
And we would love to hear from you guys on the topic of how you should handle internet trolls and how you handle internet trolls.
And in what situations do internet trolls like pop into your life?
Yeah.
Like, what are you talking about? What on what platform are you? Because that was on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And I know there's a lot of trolls on Twitter and on Facebook.
Yeah, I usually consider trolls to stick to Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah.
So I was surprised to see one on Instagram.
Well,
they're everywhere.
Yeah, they're everywhere. And Facebook owns Instagram.
That's
so
true.
It's only
a
matter of time before Instagram is ruined.
Obviously, we're going to let you guys lead the discussion.
Yes.
In your comments for the next episode. I'm sure everyone is familiar, but just in case you're not, I want to define what an internet troll is. The short answer that I found online is basically a person who feeds off the anger of others as he enrages them intentionally over the internet. The longer answer is a troll is a person who starts quarrels or upsets people on the internet to distract and sow discord by posting inflammatory and digressive, extraneous, or off-topic messages in an online community with the intent of provoking readers into displaying emotional responses and normalizing tangential discussion, whether for the troll's amusement or for a specific gain.
Yeah.
Which is very, very concise.
Mm-hmm. It's usually kind of anonymous. Not always.
Yeah.
Like there's some high profile trolls, but these people are sowing discord. They're just, trying to get a rise out of people.
Well, and a lot of the time too, when you're trying to have
a rational discussion.
Yeah, exactly. You're trying to have a rational discussion. They're never answering questions directly.
Never.
But then they'll pose other questions that don't really have anything to do with what you're talking about.
Yeah.
It's just, it's meant to confuse and distract and
anger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So our strategy, as we already said, is don't feed the trolls.
Don't do it.
They're not trying to have an intelligent, rational discussion.
Yeah, we learned the hard way. And never again.
Yeah, trying to rationalize with them is never going to end well.
Yeah.
But some people may feel differently. It is good to be open to other points of view.
Oh, my mom used to always say, you can't make sense out of nonsense.
Mm-hmm. That's very accurate and pertinent to what we're talking about. It is good, in theory, to be open to other points of view, and you don't want to shut down every stranger with different opinions just because you're afraid that this discussion might devolve. So it's hard to decide without having a little bit of back and forth if someone is an actual troll. What are your experiences with trolls?
Hopefully we can get some tips.
Let us know.
Yeah.
We would love to get your responses by Saturday, January 12th, if possible. So please email us before that so we have time to record the episode before it goes live.
Yes, please.
You can email us at beyondreproachpod@gmail.com or send us a voice memo. You can email us a voice memo or slip into our DMs like the kids like to do these days.
Sexy.
It's so sexy. Thank you to everyone who wrote in.
Yes.
This was a heavy subject, but we did it. And and we got some really
teamwork.
Beautiful responses.
We
Thank
did.
You.
Really thought-provoking, really great insights
Yeah.
from parents and teachers and just concerned citizens. Thank you, guys. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so
much. We can't do this without you.
We look forward to hearing your thoughts on the next topic.
Yes.
Bye.
Ta-da. 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 Wait.